Hoi, 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 cheeky monkey.
Hello and welcome to a Burkamp Wonderland podcast. I almost said radio show and we don't even say that anymore. We say ABW Live. So great start. As you might have guessed, I wasn't supposed to be on tonight. Danny was supposed to be here. Probably wasn't going to be your host because he would have cocked it up as well, but he had to have a bath or he was ill or one or the other. So anyway, so there's no one pushing the buttons other than me and I'm hosting, so I've got full control tonight. So I've invited two people on whose ego is possibly bigger than Aaron Ramsey's to try and rein me in a little bit. First, I go to my constant radio friend, Josh. How are you doing, mate?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah, it's great to be back.
Yeah, and looking fine in HD as well, I must say.
Thank you. Yeah, all credit to Sky and their fibre optic broadband. If they do give me a discount for that, that would be lovely.
But, yeah, we'll all take that, Sky.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You know how we are with Sky and our broadband.
And also joined by an extremely dapper this evening. He got dressed up and everything for you, listeners and viewers. This is why you should watch the podcast now, because you get the video interaction. It's only the pirate Chris Carpenter. How are we doing, mate?
I'm good. Tappy tappy to you all. Yes, I have to stress, I'm not sat here in a suit because I want to impress anyone. I'm doing it for Kelly. No, I'm not. That's a complete lie. But I did message her and say, this will be funny. You haven't seen me in a suit ever. But no, I have just been to a meeting. So I've literally raced home and here I am. So for those of you who don't want to watch the video, you've dodged a really good bullet this week.
I especially like the fact you've got the cat there. So you could be proper Bond villain.
I could. You know. Yeah, that's yeah. Tom. Bob is also out of shot. looking very miserable, but yeah, at some point I will try and get him on my lap during this pod.
See, we've just increased our views now just by saying that there's a cat on video,
or cut all the views off either way.
Possibly, yeah.
If they're particularly from South Wales, yes.
Get on with it.
Oh dear! And speaking of getting on with it, we will do that. We're going to try and keep it a little bit shorter than usual tonight. There's only one game to talk about, and unfortunately, it's a loss. 1-0 loss. I was about to say win, idiot. 1-0 loss to Everton up at Goodison. I had the distinct pleasure of watching the game after it had already finished, which is always fun when you know there's a loss coming. But Josh and Chris got to see it live. Josh, just coming to you first. Your thoughts on the game and the overall result?
Oh, it was I don't know if I would say dull game. It was just awful to watch. It's just something that has been an issue for 2-3 seasons now. Just our away form. The weird thing is, I think our away form is, you know, better than it has been in the past 2 seasons. But the drop we've had and the fact we haven't, really, with this generation of players, been able to turn around our away form, bearing in mind the kind of quality signings we've managed to put into this squad, especially up the top. And we couldn't seem to cope with anything that Everton threw at us. Yeah, you know, they utilise the long ball incredibly well. They've got arguably one of the best goalkeepers in the league for doing that, for playing those long balls up to the strikers who, you know, kept our three at the back pretty occupied all game. And just our ability going, you know, the other way, just our attacks just having no bite, no drive to them. Something that, you know, we seriously lacked just something. It was, you can't even say creativity because of the personnel we had on the field. You know, who is a more creative midfielder statistically than Mesut Ozil in the league? You know, you're looking at a handful in Man City and that's it. And then you've got Mkhitaryan there, another player who we've seen is wonderfully creative on his day. And then just Lacazette, who in the first 10 minutes, I think, kind of shrinked away from the game a little bit after that challenge he received from Kurt Zouma, which I'm sure we'll go on to of whether or not it was a penalty. But I think after that, he'd just been kicked so high up in the air and was getting no real decent service into him that you know, you almost don't blame him for not putting in effort, because it was just, there was no reward to any of his risks.
Yeah, he does always work hard, and sometimes it feels like the rest of the team aren't. I don't think anyone in particular came out of that game with their heads held high. Chris, do you want to talk about the goal and the interesting defending? We just should just say very quickly, there's some argument over whether it should have stood or not because of the whole foot over the line thing. I think Mash of the Day said by the rules it was okay. Then some other people, some ex-referees, said it shouldn't have stood. Does it really matter? Because I didn't think we deserved anything out of the game. So if you're just ignoring that part of it for now, at least.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, really, we can draw a line under that. By the letter of the law, as I understand it, it shouldn't have stood. But I don't think there's any way that our defenders stopped playing because they decided that that ball or that player was out. Therefore, yeah, they were relying on the decision. We tried to defend it and massively cocked it up. I mean, it was just, it was written, wasn't it? You know, Phil Jagielka, 36 now. I seem to remember him playing a goal for Sheffield United against us in an FA Cup tie once and making several blinding saves. So it, as soon as Michael Key was out in the warm-up, it was either him or Theo Walcott were going to score seven goals and we'd lose. But all jokes aside, it was just poor defending. We didn't react to the first ball. It didn't appear like, I think it was Mustafi and Monreal didn't have their men properly. We were loose. It was a very simple training ground type of goal to me. You know, it looked like something that Everton had worked on previously. And we fell straight to the trap. And it was frustrating because, like Josh touched on there, you know, we probably could have had a pen earlier on. I thought we started the game with the right intent. But it was almost like we sort of just inevitably went, oh, well, that's the sort of goal we concede, and shrugged and got on with it. And it just didn't seem to be any reaction to the ball dropping, and nobody was on their toes. A few people, I think, have said they thought the goalkeeper could have done more. I'm not personally in that camp. I don't think there was any goalkeeping error. I just thought his defenders in front of him let him down. And time and again, that ball into the box with height just undoes us, and we don't have an answer to it. And yeah, until we start learning how to defend those sort of deep balls into the box, we're always going to be likely to concede that type of goal because we just don't seem to learn from mistakes.
It was odd, wasn't it, John, in that kind of respect? We've been, you know, this isn't the first time we've been behind in a game or conceded away from home. This isn't our first rodeo. What do you reckon to that kind of response that we got? Because, you know, as I say, we haven't kept a single clean sheet away from home all season. So this isn't unusual that we've conceded a goal.
Yeah, it's almost, I mean, I kind of expected, I think in the preview I did with Danny, I said 2-1 win for us. I was actually optimistic for once, more for me. But I expected us to concede because we just do away from home. The fact that we're the only team in the league who haven't kept a clean sheet away from home all season is, I mean, it's more than embarrassing. It's ridiculous, to be honest. I think even Huddersfield has managed it, which really does say something. But you kind of, obviously it's different for me because I knew the result before I started watching the game, but I expected some sort of difference in the way that we played and we approached the game, at least in the second half. And I thought maybe for 5-10 minutes we did a little bit, but it was more that it was Ramsey and his energy and pushing forward and trying to make things happen than the rest of the team. And they just didn't seem interested. It's such a weird thing to put your finger on, and you know, we've got some questions about it later, why our away form is so bad. A few people did mention the challenge on Lacazette very early on from Kurt Zouma. Is the Guendouzi tackle yellow card just before that or after that challenge? I can't remember.
I think it was after, wasn't it?
I believe it was after, because yeah, that was almost our first attack of the game within 5 or 6 minutes.
Yeah, so, I mean, just coming to that, was that, to both of you, Chrissy first, was that a penalty for you, the tackle on Lacazette?
I'm going to say no, and probably people expect me to say otherwise because it's my boy. But no, it's one of those that if you put your Arsenal hat on, it is, and if you take your Arsenal hat off, and if that's going the other way, and that's Mustafi inevitably diving in, you're screaming it's not. The problem I have with the modern game, and particularly what we're seeing with VAR, is everything, every single element of contact is being scrutinized now. It's a contact sport. You know, don't get me wrong. I get that Zuma was late and it was a fairly robust challenge, to put it politely. And I did think some of the challenges Lacazette went on to receive were fouls. And I don't think the referee did enough to, is it Kevin Friend, did enough to manage the situation. And I thought he could have been protected more. But that challenge, personally, it was early in the game. And, you know, you've both played the game. I've played the game to a degree. Sometimes when you realise as a defender your man's got wrong side of you, you lunge in last ditch and you make the challenge. And it's just one of those. And I think the problem you get is Lacazette sort of gets the shot away or gets to the ball first. And I suppose that's the argument. You could say yes, and then the challenges come afterwards. But I don't think it was. And I think people are clutching at straws a bit to suggest otherwise. But Josh, you might think otherwise. I don't know.
Yeah, give me a second to go and clutch those straws, Chris. I did think, you know, it's one of those that if that happens in the middle of the park, the referee immediately blows his whistle, gives a free kick. For me, player tries to get his pass away and you're going with advantage at that point and he gets wiped out. Free kick. So for me, and yeah, perhaps I've got my Arsenal hat on. You know, it's the hindsight of having video that we've got and the replays, that I think that it was a penalty. Unfortunately, these guys have only got one opportunity to see it through. You know, you could completely understand that the referee is perhaps watching the ball then take its flight and misses Lacazette getting wiped out. But it, you would hope that at least the fourth official or someone would have seen that incident, because it was a late challenge on him.
Yeah, it's a tough one to call, because I think, like Chris says, and like you mentioned there, Josh, whenever the player, if a player gets his shot away, generally the referee is going to be following the ball and not necessarily what happens after that. And sometimes they almost ignore it. It'll be interesting to see what happens next season with VAR and whether that sort of thing will be pulled back. And, you know, they'll say, oh, well, there's been a serious incident. We want you, the referee, to review it. And it might be slightly different. The only other sort of two incidents in the game I wanted to highlight before we sort of go into individual performances and then the team in general, because I think it's, you know, like we already said, no one really performed that well. Ramsey had a pretty good chance for him by his standards. The volley, Josh, were you expecting him to at least hit the target with that one?
Well, he was the player that kind of showed the most kind of guile when he came on, really. It showed, I'm not sure if it showed how much we're going to miss him next season, but it shows what we need to replace in that kind of, we need someone who's got that energy in the midfield, that kind of drive. I think the early yellow card to Guendouzi almost kind of neutered him in that respect, because you know he likes to, you know, push the fold, should we say, of what is what right and what is wrong in terms of committing himself fully. Mm-hmm. And I think doing that early on kind of restricted us as well for what he could do and for him to fully utilize his game. But yeah, when Ramsey came on, it was something that we kind of got that spark back in the side. But unfortunately, after about 10 minutes and, you know, those opportunities he was having, he must have had about four shots in the first 10 minutes of when he came on. Mm. It was just, he almost then regressed into the same level as the rest of the team around him and folded back in on himself. And we've just, you know, it was that same issue we saw in the first half.
Yeah. Chris, being the lover of all things French, as we often tease you for.
No.
We honestly, listeners, we never pick on him at all.
never.
The Guendouzi tackle, now, I obviously, again, came to the game watching it late, and whenever you're watching it live and it's first thing, you're generally a little bit more biased and more lenient on Arsenal players. When I saw Guendouzi's tackle that was given as a yellow card, my first reaction was, oh my God, how has he not been sent off? Looking back at it now, were you thinking the same thing, or was it just a badly high studs up on the shin tackle and it's just the yellow?
even looking at it then, I haven't changed my opinion to this day. He should have walked, simple as that. He got away with it, you know. Yeah. I don't mind those sort of challenges because I think sometimes in midfield you need to put yourself around. I mean, all I'd say is if Torreira's against they got new stadium, Tottenham, as well. I don't know.
I haven't heard anything about that.
Yeah, apparently. It looks like a toilet. Fantastic place. Twats. Yeah, it's if Torreira's was a red card, then Guendouzi's was four reds. I mean, it was a horrendous challenge, and ironically on the same ankle that Luca Dean had injured in the warm up. So I don't know if there was leave a bit on him type of message was given out there, but no, I mean he got away with it. The impetulance of youth, etc., and so on. But no, he got away with that. I think it's one of those. If that happens, even 10 minutes later. And with a stronger referee, he probably walks. But it's one of those that if you do it in the first 10 to 15 minutes, you tend to get away with it, yeah. Unless you've got a really strong referee or a really crap referee, depending on which way you look at it. But yeah, he got away with that big time. And that's probably a side of his game he does need to work on. And it was the same at Lorient. If we go back to when we first signed him and people said, you know, what sort of player are we getting? This is a player who does like a booking and does like a red card. He does like to go to ground and put his studs through people. So yeah.
I mean, he's young. He's very young though. So that's something that's going to develop in his game and he'll learn from anyways.
Yeah. Hopefully
that sort of thing can easily be removed from your game. I'd be more worried if he was, you know, misplacing passes week in, week out and couldn't control the ball, which is not a problem for him. So for, you know, like, I think like Josh said, that once he got that booking, he did play a lot within himself. And I think it's probably fair to say that, you know, no disrespect to Elneny, but playing next to him in midfield is probably not the best thing for Guendouzi. I think he needs a more experienced head next to him, whether it is Xhaka or Ramsey, just someone a little bit more expansive in their game. Elneny's a tidy squad player, and we always say it, but he's very Danielson.
I think so. You need someone in there that doesn't necessarily need to be concentrating fully on their own game at the same time.
Yeah.
Because the thing with Elneny, you know, what, this is the second start all season for him. He's got to be, you know, if he wants to stay in this side at the moment, he really needs to be thinking about his own performance rather than trying to help other people.
Yeah.
It's that kind of selfishness that I think he needed.
What did you both think of the lineup? Because I don't know if that's something we should touch on, but I know quite a lot of people were annoyed, a lot of people blame the manager. I tend to come down on the side of the coin that says, looking at that lineup on paper, I totally agree what Josh has said there. I think Mohamed Elneny is a limited player, but I do think he comes in for some unfair flack. You know, he's not a Sunday league player, but as you say, him and Guendouzi, there just isn't that. I can feel Jace rolling his eyes already, but this is when I say that we miss a player like Santi Cazorla. I prefer a player like him or obviously Xhaka in our squad now that has that ability on the ball as well as a destructive force next to him. I think you need that yin yang, whereas what we had there was two bricks in a wall rather than creativity. And then people are saying, oh, why isn't Ramsey playing when he clearly had a knock the last game? And we've got arguably the biggest game of our season on Thursday. I'd found it weird that people question the lineup.
I think before the game, when I saw it, I was like, it's fine. You know, it's not a midfield pairing I would like to see majority of the time. And that's not a knock on either player. I just think that combination together isn't the greatest. But because of the formation we're playing, the fact you've got Ozil, you've got Mkhitaryan, you're playing with the wing-backs, you've got Lacazette, who not only can score your goals, but can make things happen. There's enough creativity in the team that you don't need one of the two centre-mids, you know, in that formation to be a creative force. And let's be honest, it's not like Guendouzi can't find a pass either. You know, he's been involved in some goals and build up, and he's played some lovely passes this season. So it's not like he hasn't got that ability. He's not the same player. He's not got the same, you know, direct sort of ping a ball like Xhaka or the running and movement of a Ramsey. He's a different kind of player, but he can still help find a pass. So I thought that lineup was fine, considering Torreira's out. You know, Ramsey's coming back from a knock. You, like you said, Chris, you don't really want to risk him. Iwobi, I think, played 60 minutes in the last game. He didn't look at his best. The only question mark anyone had was Aubameyang, but I'm still the majority of the time of the opinion that I think Lacazette is a better lone striker, depending on the opposition, obviously, and how high a line they play.
Yeah, I think completely agree with what your points are on the the lineup. There was enough creativity in that side that, you know, having Elneny and Guendouzi in there and comparing it to, you know, you've then got the players either side of him. A player who I thought did play well with his ball distribution. And to be fair, I'm hoping there's nothing around me that gives my location away for when the hordes come. Mustafi with his long balls. I actually think the way that he passed out from the back with his long ball situation, the distribution, because we don't have a Xhaka and we don't have a Torreira at the moment who can play those passes. Yes, he is 98% of a liability. But when you give him that space and he can play one of those long passes, to be honest, it was a good outlet for us. And he was pinging it out to Monreal on the wings.
And I do think he's... out of the game. Well, I mean, yes and no. You know, look, let's be honest. If there's a mistake in a game in the defence, the person...
He's going to make it.
I mean, it's not always going to be him, but you think straight away, you think Mustafi, just because he's got that tendency to slide in, and there was a really weird tackle he made late on in the game that just didn't make any sense, and one of his passes was very, very far astray. But I think Josh is right that actually the majority of the time his pass out from the back is quite neat and tidy. It's one of the things he's good at. I don't actually think him and, not Kolasinac, Socrates had that bad of a game. I think they made Calvert-Lewin look a lot better than perhaps he is. And they seem to struggle a little bit with him, which did surprise me. I actually thought Socrates would be fine with that kind of, you know, big physical striker. It's kind of what he enjoys doing, and Mustafi to cover him. But I didn't think either of them had a particularly bad game. It was just another lackluster away performance that we're becoming all too familiar with, that could, you know, in theory, cost us our season, or at least our hopes for this season.
Yeah, we did concede a hell of a lot of shots in that game.
23, yeah. Wasn't it? 23 shots?
To be honest, from where the shots are coming from, it's the midfield rather than the defence, because, yeah, you know, those guys are in front of the keeper trying to put the block in. So the shot isn't coming from defenders not defending, it's coming from the midfielders not midfielding.
Second balls as well. Like, I mean, yeah, if Everton had won 4-0, it reminded me a bit in the second half of that game at Southampton a few years back over Christmas, and we lost 4-0. We got absolutely taken apart by Shane fucking Long. Yeah, you know, it was like that. We were just so open. It was
if their striker didn't have the grand total of 6 league goals this season, we could have got really punished.
I mean, Richarlison, thankfully, I guess, for us, because goal difference could end up counting, had an off day. Because the amount of times he got in behind was just ridiculous. I mean, I think we've all been singing the praises of Kolasinac recently, and he was just not there at all this game. And again, not trying to single anyone out, because I thought Maitland-Niles was equally as poor on the right-hand side. I think that might have just been one of those games where you can maybe give it to him on age, and it was quite physical and maybe a little bit intimidating. And a bit of credit as well to Everton, because I thought they pressed really well. And they hustled and bustled, and, you know, they have got good players. You know, whatever people say, Gylfi Sigurdsson is a good player. I thought Bernard showed some really nice touches in the game for them as well. And Richarlison on his day can certainly be good.
Was this a game where you think perhaps we should have gone with a bit more experience across the back, with maybe Lichtsteiner coming back into the squad?
I just don't see that team couldn't have still gone out and won. It doesn't make any sense to me. And I like the fact you stayed with the back three away from home. Yes, we have been conceding goals, obviously. Still did. But it does offer us a bit more security. And when your midfield is, you know, perhaps more limited than normal, those wing-backs do become really important. Did you want to talk about Mesut Ozil and him throwing his training top?
He's cut his through his jacket, didn't he?
Yeah.
He's such a strange one, because he's like the thing that you can't talk about, but you can't not talk about by talking about, if that makes any sense.
It's not singling out Mesut Ozil, because I thought Mkhitaryan was just as bad, and you know, Aubameyang when he came on was pretty bad, and Ramsey was good for like 10 minutes, and I'm a huge Ramsey fan, but afterwards he just faded completely. But Iwobi again was good for 5 minutes and then just gone. But because it's Ozil, and because he's come back into the team, and seemingly things between him and Emery have, you know, all sort of healed up a little bit, we've been playing better, and he just disappeared in this game again.
We didn't seem to feed him either, I didn't think. We didn't seem to get him in positions where he could be profitable with the ball. We seemed to just sort of lump it. We didn't seem to play through the lines. I think that the trouble you've got, and I think I've made this point on another podcast before, and it still remains the same. On his day, Meza is still the best number 10 in the world. The problem is the game of football now does not play with number 10s. None of the big clubs do. You know, yes, you've got players who could operate in that position. You've got your Dybalas, your Coutinhos, your Hamsik. You know, there are players that play in those positions. You know, even Kylian Mbappe will play that role for PSG at time with that free role. But they're not number 10s. Fekir is another one. They're not players that are strictly in that team just to do one job and one job only, and that's create. There's more to them. They have to be mobile. They have to be quick. They have to be good at tracking back, winning the ball in deep areas, building from deep. Meza is that final killer pass provider. I do think he gets a hard deal for not tracking back, because actually he does track back and people seem to conveniently ignore that fact. The problem is he's just not very good at it. He does give away silly fouls. You know, he isn't particularly good in the air in terms of defensive wise. He can attack across in the air, but he's not good at defending crosses. And I don't really think he's particularly well adapted at knowing what position to play when he's tracking back. You get the best out of him when you're playing offensively. And as Josh has said, they created 23 shots. We might have had more possession, but I can't think of more than three, maybe four chances we created. So it wasn't a game that suited Meza. And, you know, that's the gamble you take when you play him. One day he'll be brilliant. Another day, it's not his game.
There was a couple of things that kind of saw Meza having to do, which we saw in the Newcastle game as well, where he's having to come deep and play that kind of Xhaka role, or that Torreira role, that kind of metronome in the centre of the park, because we've got two players in there whose game it really isn't, or three if we include Aaron Ramsey as well. He's not a guy who's going to dictate the tempo of the ball. He's going to, you know, dictate the tempo of his second runs. That's kind of his game in that respect. What we're seeing with Ozil, he's still trying to do stuff for him, but, you know, if he drops deep, someone else needs to fill in that space for him. And I don't think that was happening. We weren't seeing, you know, at Newcastle, we saw Ramsey go ahead of Ozil in that case. If Ozil was dropping deep, he had a run in front of him. Mkhitaryan seemed to, you know, have other things on his mind other than football, because God knows what he was doing, just enjoying the sun, I think, for most of that game. But that's something you need to have. If you then got Lacazette dropping deep, again, we didn't have that player in behind Laka. So Ozil coming deep, drop the whole team deep, which it really shouldn't do. And the whether or not that's a tactical thing or just our players not really being experienced or having that kind of game mentality.
The thing you want is you almost want what we used to have in Petit and Vieira, but you just can't find them anymore. I remember when we were linked with Arturo Vidal and a lot of people were losing their minds about how bad a signing it was because he was old and past it and blah, 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 blah. But, and granted, his move to Barcelona hasn't been a raging success. But the thing I love about a player like that is they've got the creativity as well as the long range shooting, as well as the engine and the ability to win a tackle in a deep area and then move the ball forwards and break the lines. Whereas Meza, as you said, Josh, you don't want him back in the Xhaka position. You want him, almost you would want to say to him, just sit in the 10. But that's no good if we haven't got a player behind him who's going to win the ball and drive forward. I know it's past history and we don't want to harp back to the Invincibles every time, but Patrick Vieira and Roy Keane were two of the best players in history at doing that role. Winning the ball deep areas with a clean slide challenge, getting up and then travelling and covering ground to then release the Pireses, the Lundbergs, the Bergkamps into the role to feed the other players. That we don't have that type of player in Meza. That's not his game. He's never going to win a 50-50 or a sliding tackle. But I do think he gets a really bad rap for this whole, oh, he doesn't work hard, oh, he doesn't track. He does, but he does it in his Meza way. And that's what people don't like, because he's not thundering into challenges. So okay. So
considering, you know, our away record is dreadful. I mean, I know it's better than last season, That's not hard to do. The Pirates away record, I'm assuming, is better than Arsenal's was last season.
Just.
And it wouldn't surprise me if you'd actually managed to keep a clean sheet as well away from home, because Arsenal haven't.
We've had two clean sheets this year. Well, look at that. So there you go. Yeah.
More than Arsenal and Huddersfield.
Put yeah.
I think Huddersfield actually have two, maybe three.
Oh, that's going to ruin it, didn't they?
Sorry.
I don't know if that's more embarrassing for the Pirates or for... No, it's definitely for us.
We can definitely go Fulham and Brighton. They both have one each.
The question I would have is, as our away form is so poor, as it stands, we're still in the top four at the moment and it's still in our hands, but we have two particularly tricky looking away games, if you ask me, Wolves and Watford. Two of them. We've got Leicester away as well.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Okay, three.
and Burnley.
Yeah, that should be fun.
Brexitly.
Yeah, that's the last game of the season, isn't it? They'll be on the... I was going to say beach. They'll be at Blackpool by then.
They'll be in the Championship by then, hopefully.
So, considering how important, obviously, top four is, and that's ignoring whatever happens in the Europa League, the fact that we play so lackluster and we're so slow to start games, does Emery now have to say, you know what, I'm going to have to go back a little bit on what I've done with Mesut and the bridge building they've done and say, I can't start you in away games anymore. I've got to take you out of the squad again for away games. And again, this is not because he played any worse than any other player. I don't think he did. I thought he was as poor as everyone else. But he isn't the kind of player, like you said, Chris, who is going to give you that energy and fight and the sort of intangible passion thing, you know, blah, 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 whatever you want to call it, that you are going to need a lot of the time in the Premier League in away games. Josh, does that mean Mesut has to come out again for those, just at least until the end of the season, just to see us into top four?
I certainly contemplated it post-game. I think in looking back, you know, the anger of post-game, then yeah, perhaps I don't want to see him ever wearing an Arsenal shirt ever again. But, you know, that's how, you know, that's how reactive we can be. And I think that's why a lot of our players get a lot of stick straight after the 90 minutes. But thinking about it and looking at what we can do, you know, we're going to need every player right until the last. I think it's, you know, cutting your nose off to spite your face with that kind of movement. And to be honest, we've got to try and help our creative players be creative. I don't think they were just the main issue. Obviously, it didn't help. We didn't create any chances. There were other mitigating circumstances, but of course, they don't get a clean, you know, they don't get a clean slate for this whole Everton game. I think a case of rotating them out, you know, we've still got, you know, I think the only reason we saw Mkhitaryan or even Ozil start this game was because Iwobi had dropped out of form. And, you know, player favouritism aside, I think we can't say that Iwobi hasn't had a good season for Arsenal, even great by his standards.
It's his best goal scoring and assist season I think he's ever had. And the season's not over yet, so he's improving year on year, even if people were, you know, not particularly pleased with him. I know some people really don't rate him, but
absolutely,
a lot of that's agenda, isn't it? I think.
But again, he is. Yeah,
made their mind up, and that's it.
When we saw him come on, as well, he gave that spark to the team again. Yeah. The same spark that Aaron Ramsey brought to the side, and again after 10 minutes, he'd kind of faded away. And is that just that performance we were putting out just stinking the place up? I think we do need to find and roll back to where we were at the beginning of the season. Perhaps it's Lacazette and Aubameyang back up top again.
The thing with that Mesut thing, though, is, like you were saying there, John, I don't think it's necessarily about taking Mesut out. I just think that you can't play Mesut and Mkhitaryan when you've got Guendouzi and Elneny behind him. I think that's the key. I think if you supplement Xhaka or Torreira back into that position for either of Guendouzi or Elneny yesterday, you probably have a different result. If you put Xhaka in there, you've probably got more creative link to get the ball to Mesut. And if you put Torreira in there, you probably find we win the midfield battle, which gives the wingers more, or the wide men, more chance to get on the ball like Mesut. So I don't think it's a case of like rip up the playbook, but we have to learn to defend better. Two quick things, actually. One, Wolves and Watford despite what a lot of people are thinking, don't worry me at all, for the simple reasons that what happened yesterday in that crazy FA Cup tie, for me, Wolves will be on the floor now. And if I wish we were playing him next Monday, I really do. Because, but then who are we playing next Monday? Watford. Ideal. There is no way in hell. Yes, they'll put in a performance. I'm not saying it's going to be an easy game. But there's no way in hell that those players are going to be 110% committed to every single 50-50 now with that cup final in mind. They're just not. There's a mentality thing is going to come in where there's going to be that slight edge of, we need to put in a performance. We want to stay on the side. But there'll be that self-doubt. And I think it'll be the same with Wolves now. Wolves got nothing to play for this season.
They've got the... It's Man City win the FA Cup, then seventh place gets a European spot.
Yeah, agreed.
Which is what Wolves are playing for, and Watford as well, to be fair, in the league.
And when I say nothing to play for, I don't mean they're just going to give up. But what I mean is, I think Wolves have got enough opportunity to win. I don't think Wolves will necessarily look at Arsenal and think, well, we've got to win that game. Mm. I think they'll look at that and think, well, we've beaten some of the top sides around us. If we can beat Arsenal as well, fantastic. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying we're going to parade into Molineux and win 7-0. But it's the sort of game that I think Wolves will be on the floor for a little while. I think it will take them a bit of time to shake that result. They put a lot into that cup tie as well. So I think the Leicester one worries me a bit more because of Brenton and the impact he's had. And Jamie Vardy is the sort of player that you just know will take us to pieces given the chance. And just on that, the one player I'm worried about a little bit, and it breaks my heart to say it because I love him to death, I'm really worried about Nacho Monreal at the moment. His legs have gone from what I've seen since he's come back from this injury he got in the start of the season. He doesn't look the same player. I don't know whether it's confidence in his body, whether he's just not up to speed. Dom's probably better qualified to speak about it than I am. But he looks like a player who all of a sudden is his age. And we all know what happened to good old Lick Steiner in that regard. When you play that role, if your legs go, you're in the shit. And obviously we've got the ban for Socrates now. Coz is still a doubt for Thursday. It worries me a bit that we're going to be relying on, I think maybe we need to look at more going back to that four at the back and, you know, building a stronger base in front of it, like Josh said earlier, to protect the centre-backs rather than packing the defence and hoping that the midfield can, you know, do a little bit of a job until the back three deal with them. Because I'm not convinced that someone like a Monreal at the moment is at full tilt. So just a worry.
It is a worry that the player who would come in to replace him would be Xhaka.
Yeah.
And talking about what we need in the midfield, we're taking the player that we're desperately missed in the last two fixtures was Xhaka. Mm. You know, even though we got a win at Newcastle or at home to Newcastle, we still missed Xhaka in that game. We still need that kind of metronome in the midfield. And if we've got to sacrifice that again to start playing him in defence to deal with Monreal, I think, to be honest, I think we're better off at four at the back.
I'm hoping Imrie's learned his lesson from the Xhaka at centre-back thing.
It's not about Xhaka in defence. For me, it's more about getting him back in midfield because the one we miss is Coz. I just think that he's just... he's so key to how Socrates or Mustafi play. If you got Koscielny, Socrates and Mustafi, or in an ideal world, Koscielny, Socrates and Monreal, that's an infinitely better line than the one without Coz. Because Coz just brings that quiet air of composure. Sometimes maybe you might be too laid back, yeah? But he's generally going to give you a 9 out of 10, an 8 out of 10. Whereas Mustafi will give you 1 9 out of 10 and 5 4 out of 10s.
Yeah.
And you never quite know what you're going to get. So I think having Coz back is more key to ripping the whole playbook up. But well, I guess we'll see. Hopefully he'll be back for Thursday. But I don't really know what the injury's got. Is it just a bit of soreness? Or
I'm not sure exactly what the injury is.
I'll look it up.
It was supposed to be... he was possibly going to be back for the Everton game. But yeah, it was late assessment. Mm. Also, listeners and viewers, if you are watching, you did just hear Chris say Xhaka was more important in midfield. I know. I was going to say, even you, Chris, who is not Xhaka's biggest fan, know how much we miss him in midfield.
Yeah, I'm not, and I still think there are infinitely better options out there. But while he's an Arsenal player, he needs to be in that midfield when Ramsey or Torreira aren't, definitely.
Yeah. There's no doubt that we do miss him. I mean, I think that's kind of it for the Everton game, to be honest. There wasn't much else that happened. We talked about the subs, Aubameyang. I mean, we talked about a few individuals, but as we said, you know, no one was brilliant. I think we got some questions on the away form. Let me just double check. See, this is why Danny does this, and he has all this information already. I had to do this all very quickly, listener.
Hey, don't beat yourself up, John. Danny has, let's get it straight. Danny has let you down tonight. He had one job. And yeah. He's let you down. End of story. Koscielny, by the way, bruised foot. I want to be positive, and it depends on how he's progressing, is the quote from, I presume that's Unai Emery. So,
okay. Well, I mean, if he was being assessed before the Everton game, you would hope that then he's perhaps at least going to be ready for Napoli.
Xhaka as well, I think, is a doubt because of the groin injury.
Although, the good thing we should say is the Napoli game is at home. So, you know, we're a totally different team at home. Weirdly, we didn't have any questions on the away form, but actually it's part of Fife's forum question. So I will leave that for now. Just briefly want to touch on the Napoli game on Thursday night. Are you confident, Josh, going into that as it is a home fixture and our home record this season is, I mean, I think barring Man City and maybe Liverpool, like the best in the league, and our European home record as well has certainly been excellent.
Yeah, I think the positive that I've pulled out of the Everton game is that I hope it's the rocket up the proverbial backside for us, you know, to then go almost unbeaten for the rest of the season, really. Because you look at those fixtures and, you know, we can go, oh, you know, Watford were difficult, could be difficult. Wolves could, you know, be on their backsides. We've got, you know, Leicester, Burnley. It's basically a run of fixtures that are all banana skins. We're on a hiding to nothing in every single fixture apart from this Napoli tie. With the way that I'm looking at it, yeah, as you say, it's home. And Italian sides notoriously don't travel well. I think the issue is we know we're probably going to concede when we go to Naples. Are we going to win that tie in there? I don't think we could turn it around. We'll put it that way. We saw what we were like when we went away to Rennes. You know, the kind of what a big partisan crowd can potentially do to this side. So perhaps I think we've got to get a good number of goals past Napoli. The one thing that worries me is they've got a very good European statesman looking after that side in Carlo Ancelotti. And if he's a man, he'll know exactly what we're like. And he'll take a 1-0 loss because he knows that he could put two or three past us back in Naples. So hoping that, you know, we at least get a goal or two in that game. I think we could do it for sure, because you wouldn't be a football fan if you couldn't take some positivity from it. But we have had performances this season that have looked really promising. The kind of stuff that we put against, you know, the Chelsea's, some of the Liverpool performances, Man City less so. But we've certainly can show that we can turn up against teams.
Yeah. Chris, I mean, is there any point asking you? We always know how optimistic you are.
Well, I'll keep it short because I actually want to hear from you more, because you've obviously followed Serie A a bit more. I know not so much this year, but you have done previous years and you watch a bit more than I do. So, but based upon what I've seen and what I think of Napoli, I think I said outwardly in the draw I was happy with it, because I think this Arsenal side needs to be tested. I think we get the best out of this team when we've got a big opposition, see Man United and Spurs for key examples, or Chelsea. I think if we'd have drawn a lesser side, we arguably might have struggled more. It's under the lights, the home legs first. I do think we need to be going to Napoli with a lead, ideally two goals. I think my two main concerns really are the Napoli that I saw come to the Parc des Princes in the Champions League were outstanding. They matched PSG physically, tactically. Ancelotti obviously has been around the block. He knows his stuff. And obviously for his time at Chelsea, he'll know what to expect from Arsenal and how we play. But they were brilliant in France. They were really unlucky to concede a late leveler to PSG in that game. They deserved all 3 points. I thought they were clever in how they dispatched Liverpool in the Champions League away from home, albeit I think it was the last minute. It was Insigne got the last minute goal in that game.
I think so, yeah.
And I think he's going to miss the game from memory. I think he's got an injury. But my other concern with Napoli is they're a side that are basically secure and second in Serie A, as best I can see it, who cannot catch Juventus. I mean, who can? And this is their primary objective now. This is their key thing. And they almost lack motivation in Serie A at the moment. I think they drew with Genoa 1-1 last night, which says to me they're clearly focused on Thursday. A clean sheet would be ideal. I wouldn't put money on us to get one. And ideally, I think we need to come away with a 2-1 or ideally a 3-1, because at home, you know, it just depends what sort of side we've got. But I'd be keen to get your thoughts, John, on what we do, because, you know, Koulibaly is going to be the one we need to beat, because he's one of the better defenders in Europe. And obviously then we've got to keep them out the other end. So what do you reckon?
If we were away first, I'd be more worried. I'll be honest, just because our away form has been so dreadful. But at home, I do think we are a match for anyone. And I agree with you. I do think that when we play these bigger teams and better sides, who also play football more, you know, do play it more on the deck, we're going to fare better. They're not the Napoli that was under Sarri. They're not as rigid. They switch formations. It's more 4-4-2, although they will shuffle around a little bit and Callejon will float. And although he's essentially supposed to be a right midfielder, he kind of still does play that right wing in that 4-3-3 shape that Napoli used to play. If we can come out of it with a clean sheet at home, then I'm confident, because I agree with Josh. I mean, I wouldn't want to put money on it because you don't like betting against your own team, but we'd almost guarantee it that we will concede a goal at the Sao Paulo. They're a very good, well-oiled drill team. Ancelotti knows his stuff. It's not the same, you know, fast, very vertical, quick pass football that it was under Sarri. It's a little bit more pragmatic at times, but they've still got that explosiveness and that ability. You know, although I know people might not rate Jorginho from his time at Chelsea, but he was a very good player who could receive the ball off Koulibaly and just turn and hit a perfect pass out to Callejon, who was then in a goal. They don't necessarily do that anymore. Fabian Ruiz has been really good from the season. Zielinski, who Steve I know has spoken about quite a lot, is appearing a lot more for them now. It'll be interesting to see what they do with their defence in terms of fullbacks, because they are a little bit short in that area. I think Paolo Bandini was talking about it on Arsblog actually, and how they sort of play Maximovic sometimes at fullback, although he's not really a fullback, and they shuffle across to a back three at times, and Callejon comes in as a wing back. And it's kind of disguised the way they play that system. They do have Malqui, the young, I say young French guy, I think he's 27 actually, he's probably not, young to me. he's quite a decent fullback, Kisai as well. The one plus, I guess, is that Insigne's just come back off an injury and honestly wasn't in great form before he got the injury anyway. So
got 23 minutes yesterday.
That is a big bonus. So whether I guess he won't start in the home leg, maybe he'll come on as a sub, but I imagine they'll be gunning to get him fit for the away leg, for us at least. So that's the big thing. Obviously, Merritt will be in goal for them as well.
Not Dave the Bins at times.
No, not Dave the Bins. But it'll be interesting, because I know there's a lot of fans obviously want to see Koulibaly and why he's rated so highly. For me, I don't actually think he's the best centre-back in Serie A. But,
we both know who that is, John, don't we? and he's not called Leonardo, for those listening.
But it's the midfield battle will be interesting as well, to see what Torreira does against Alan. They will be scrapping it out, I'm sure, during the game. Can Torreira track Zielinski in his movement? I'm excited for the game because it feels like a proper European tie.
And
the
rest, I think,
largely been boring, to be honest.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I think that's a really key component in that Napoli side. I think he's been brilliant. I think he's like, as you said, like yourself, I do I suppose all three of us sit and chuckle at the English media as hipsters that we are, taking off our Peaky Blinders hats for a moment. But I do chuckle when you see like Chelsea fans going, "Yeah, fucking Jorginho is shit." Never watched him in a Napoli shirt to save their lives once, but because he doesn't fit the Chelsea mold, and because you know, their beloved Kante is being asked to play a different role, that means Jorginho is shit. He's not shit. It's just that his game doesn't, in my opinion, suit the Premier League, and I didn't think it was a great move at the time. If you stick him in Man City's midfield, he'd be brilliant. It's just Chelsea are a car crash. And I think Alan has come in and done a really, really good job based upon what I've seen of Napoli, which, as I say, albeit has been fleeting this year. But I think that battle of him and, as you say, Mario Ruiz, who's an underrated player in terms of what he does. I don't think he's ever... Fabian Ruiz, sorry. He's not one of those players who's going to, you know, Vieira it, to use him again. But he's quietly very, very good. And if we lose that midfield battle... Like you say, Dries Mertens and Callahan or Insigne, they're the sort of players that we struggle to contain if they've got free runs. Yeah. And I worry we could Monaco it if we don't win that midfield battle.
I will be interested to see, just because of the way we're obviously struggling with defenders at the moment, if Koscielny isn't back, would we do go with the back four? Because Napoli now play with two up front, and they do play normally with Mertens and Milik. And most Premier League teams, or most teams really in Europe now, aren't used to playing against two strikers for the majority of games. So it'll be interesting to see how we line up against that. But I'm excited for the game. I'm very excited. I do think we could get the win at home, but the away leg is going to be tough. And if the players, you know, shrink and get intimidated by what was, you know, to be fair, a pretty quiet Goodison crowd compared to how rowdy they can be, they're really going to struggle in the Sao Paulo.
Do you think that the reason why we've seen this back three come in the last couple of games was with this game in mind? Because we've been playing with a back four up until the international break.
I do think so, maybe. If Napoli were still playing the 4-3-3, it would be a lot more dangerous. But I think now they're 4-4-2, it does make a little bit more sense. Because someone's going to... Because Dries Mertens, although he does play up front, will obviously drift. And if Insigne does play, and although I still think he's... more likely he won't start until the second leg. He will float about a bit as well. But yeah, Emery is the sort of manager who will think that far ahead.
The trouble we've got is we basically, let's be honest, we've built the back three to accommodate Kolasinac as our best attacker, haven't we? That's the whole reason we changed to it in the first place, wasn't it? Because Kolasinac was horribly exposed as a left back. And I do worry a little bit that is a bit of a one-dimensional tactic, and if it doesn't work, we're a bit buggered. And you know, Ainsley Maitland-Niles, fair play to him, has done a very you know, adequate job at right fullback, but he's not a right fullback. No. Whatever way we want to, you know, praise him, all by all means, he's a youngster and you know, good luck to him, but he's not a fullback. He's doing a job, and he's not. Bellerin would be brilliant in this sort of game, absolutely brilliant, him on one side, Kolasinac on the other. But I mean, you know, one fullback who's not a fullback and one wing back who can only play as a wing back and can't defend particularly brilliantly, or is, you know, Kolasinac is one of those defenders. Again, it's a bit Mustafi. You either get a brilliant game where he wins every tackle, or he gets turned inside out defensively. I mean, attacking wise, he's brilliant.
The big bonus is obviously Torreira's back, and he's almost had an enforced winter break, which I think you saw in the latter stages of the Christmas and New Year period. He did look to suffer a little bit.
He needed it, didn't he?
Yeah, so I think this sort of enforced break he's had with the suspension has actually probably come at the right time for us in terms of coming back into this game. One thing I will say is, if Kolasinac is playing and he is back to somewhere near his best, that will be good for us, because that is Napoli's weakness at the moment, is their fullback area. They can be got out there.
The Portuguese guy is average at best, isn't he? What's his face?
Yeah, Mario Rui.
Yeah, I don't think he's particularly mobile, is he?
I mean, Maksimovic isn't a fullback at all when he's been asked to play there. His size is decent. Malqui as well, if he comes in.
And Goulam. But they're both like Kolasinac, aren't they? They're both...
forward-thinking.
Yeah.
So, but we shall see. That's it for sort of Napoli talk and everything. We are going to go into some listeners' questions on Fife Forum, and then we'll wrap it up. I have them all here. Danny normally posts them in this little chat box thing we have, but I forgot to do that. So I'm just going to read them out because, you know, That's what we do. And it will give Chris and Josh time to answer Fast Forum and come up with an answer for it. So Fast Forum question this week was, what can we do next season to fix our away form? So I've got a few answers. I even got some from Facebook. Wow, because I posted on Facebook, Danny. That's right. I hope you're watching this. I've got one from Facebook. Ross Nathan says, request to play all 38 games at home, which is getting a lot of love. He's got a lot of likes and some hearts for that. I think someone else said that as well, actually. Tim H, who is at Tim JB, H-A-R-G on Twitter. Our old friend Tim. Fixing waveform is easy. Get Mustafi out the door. Sign two or three centre-back sharpish. I don't think Emery rates Chambers and Kosh shouldn't be relied upon, in my opinion. Matt L. Roberts, who is at Matt L. R. 28, make sure that every player is putting in 100%. Can't afford to have players on the beach, or just write on the fixture list we're playing all 36 games against the soulless club down the road and Norwich. Shane Lynch, who's at Mystic Gunner, says we need a leader in the dressing room and on the pitch. I do think that is, again, one of those intangibles. We definitely do need something like that. Or each player can bring two home comforts away with them. For example, their mum, dog, cat, teddy bear or blanket, so they feel like they are at their home from home.
God, not the dogs again. We had that with Alexis, didn't we? Jesus.
No, Stefan Paul, who's at Stebby79, that's two B's, start a GoFundMe to build a new stadium for all 19 clubs and make them play their home games at Wembley. I particularly like that one.
Not my answer here.
Yeah. Nathaniel Mead also follows on from Ross Nathan on Facebook. He says, play every game at home. And Nicky Wilson says, pay off the refs. Josh, what answer have you got to improving our away form next season?
Mine was taken. Mine was the play or all away games at Wembley. That sounds like
mine as well. Yeah.
But unfortunately, we're, you know, our writers posting directly on Twitter now, so we can't steal off them with Fives Forum. So we've got to think of something original.
I mean, if you haven't got anything, you can just steal it. We steal content all the time. Not really. We don't, honestly.
No, we don't at all. I think, how do we solve our away form? It's getting better. I think that's the only positive I could say from it. So perhaps it is a case of time. You know, we've got a manager who this season, almost every game is an away game for him. You know, he never really played at the Emirates, you know, more than twice in his career, or managed at the Emirates twice in his career. And now he's done, 19, 20 games there. I think the fact that now he's kind of got our home form sorted, away form is the next thing to really look at. And it's to say this isn't a brand new issue either. I think that's the other thing to look at, that under a previous regime, it was on the decline. And last season, the away form was the straw that broke the camel's back. And now we've got a new guy in who's managed to build it back up again. But, you know, I think a lot of us said at the beginning of the season, Rome wasn't built in a day. And, you know, our away form wasn't suddenly going to come Man City's away form or Liverpool's away form. It was still going to be Arsenal's away form, which is always going to be a little bit dodgy.
Rome wasn't built in a day, and neither was Tottenham's new stadium, which I don't know if you've heard, they've got a new stadium.
You mean the £1 billion stadium that they're not referring to as if £1 billion was a bad thing?
And apparently it fills pints up from the bottom. Somebody told me that. I must like read these things because they didn't tell me.
I actually hadn't heard that one.
It's got the world's longest bar.
Has
which,
it?
I'm not sure if they were talking about the queue to it.
Is that because it's got the world's shortest trophy room alongside?
Yes. They had the more bar. Space, yeah, for it.
Yeah. Gotcha.
That's forward planning for you. Cause
it is.
They didn't build the trophy room because they knew it would just always be empty. So it was, what's the point? Save the money.
But remember, kids, to dare is to do, and the game is about glory. So, you know. the other gift keeps on giving.
How do you improve our away form? I've got no idea.
I think we're missing the two obvious answers to that question. So, I mean, I can wrap it up if you like.
Go on, then.
We should shoot more.
Obviously.
And we should just win more away from home.
That's a pretty good idea. Yeah.
I don't think you can question that answer. Yeah. I think that's nail on the head.
Solved it. That's
the shortest answer I've ever given. Mark it down.
Impressive. Right. Well, there you go. That is 5-4. And thank you for all your answers. And thank you as always. I'm saying to Mr. Fife, I don't actually know who posted Fife's forum this week or who came up with it. Maybe it was Danny.
Don't worry. He's probably stuck on a train somewhere anyway because Carl's pressing all the buttons. So he probably won't hear this anyway. So.
That is true. I think we might have Fife versus Carl on a podcast coming up soon.
I can't wait.
We can promise that. You know, for our listeners, someone like if we got Eddie Hearn involved, it would be pay-per-view. We're going to do it free to air.
It would be like that KSI boxing match, wouldn't it? It'd be like that, like Ricky Gervais versus KSI boxing match.
Oh, dear. Right, on to listeners' questions. We got a few this week. We got a lot from our good friend Noir Confidential. So thank you for all of yours. So I will start with Noir, who is at NoirCon. That's at Noir_con, sorry, on Twitter. If you're not following, do follow. Always worth a chat. This one will be for Chris. You can have this one. Do you think Koscielny will still be an Arsenal player next season?
Yes. I didn't, but having watched what having come back from the injury as he has, which I think I touched on the last time I was on, he's more than merited it. I think the only way he might not be is if he says to the club that he would like to move on. But if it comes down to the club and his contract, he's still got another year to run, hasn't he? It's not a question of...
I think so, yes.
Pretty sure he's got another year to run. So, yeah, we wouldn't get any value in selling him. His experience is vital. He, for me, is the only club captain, along with Xhaka, that actually should be captains right now. So, yeah, I think he will be. As I say, I think he'll end his career back in Lorient, which I'm sort of, from a Lorient perspective, quite looking forward to when that happens. But I think next year, I still think he's got a lot to offer at the top level. Is he 33 now? 32, 33?
I'm gonna pretend I know and look that up.
I think it's 33. But based upon the fact that, you know, we're probably going to try and move a certain German centre-back on in the summer. I'm not sure who to, but and you'd imagine Monreal one more year. I think you have to hang on to him. So unless he requests to go, I think he'll still be here next year. Yeah, and I'm all for that.
Fair enough. I agree on the captain thing as well. Mesut's a great player, but no, he's not a captain.
And same with Aaron as well. It's nothing against Aaron. He leads by example, but he's a Juventus player now. You've got to build for the future.
Yeah. Another one from Noir for you, Josh. Napoli have fast and agile front line that could cause us problems if we decide to play out from the back. Should we put Leno between the sticks for our matches against them as he is more calm under pressure compared to Cech?
Oh, bloody hell. I forgot Cech's going to be our goalkeeper.
Well, here you go.
Respond to that. Just get Dave the Bins in goal. Could we just borrow him for the night and stick him in?
Oh, maybe not. Yeah, I think that's my answer. Oh, golly. It's going to be Cech. No, because we at least know that I think Cech's got to that point that if he needs to, he's just going to get rid. And to be honest, with the way that it depends what our forward line looks like, but I think we could be all right if so long as Koulibaly's not going for every header. We might get some benefit out of that, pumping out to the wing.
Yeah. In a way, would you... I'm wondering if, in a way, Cech might be a better goalkeeper, given what you said, John, about Napoli's forward line. Particularly Milik is very good in the air. Mm. Leno's not the best at coming for crosses, I'd say, of his game. That's probably the weakest part of his game. And that, like Josh has said there, with Koulibaly and... You know, they are a big side, Napoli. Insigne and Callahan excluded. Although Callahan's not short, actually, is he? But... Yeah, I don't know. Maybe Cech might, yes, experience. And I'm not a fan of this rotating keepers thing. I do wish we would just. I know all teams do it now, but you know, if you sign a goalkeeper as a number two, they know they're number two. Just keep them as number two. I know Cech won't be here next year, but you know, I just play your best goalkeeper. He's a bit madness. We keep rotating, but that's another story.
Yeah. That'll be interesting to see, actually. I wonder if Emery would bite that bullet of changing keepers.
In the final, maybe.
Maybe, yeah. Napoli do like a shot from distance as well, so... Mm. Yeah.
I think maybe in the second leg, we might see it. If it's shown to be demonstrably bad, having had to check in goal, and it's
in terms of keeping the ball a bit better, maybe.
It's a big, I could see him coming pitch back as well, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's a big pitch in Napoli, isn't it? As well, that running track is quite a wide pitch, isn't it? So maybe that will be likely to play out from the back more in that game, second leg, than we are in the home leg. But
a bit of experience between the sticks as well. I think that can only help us with the way that our defence is going, you know.
Yeah. Cech's no Karius, is he? It's not like we're, you know, it's not like we're downgrading. I know he's not at the peak of his powers, but he, you know, he's not crap, is he?
He just hasn't got the same footwork as Leno has. And to be fair, I think Leno's got better as the season's gone on and played very well. Matt L. Roberts asked, at Matt L. R. 28, if we had any ex-player as a football director, who would you take, or who is the most likely? If anyone's got one, please do say. I'm trying to think.
Gilberto Silva. Had this one. I had this question similarly a couple of weeks ago. That would be my pick.
Josh?
Which former player would I have?
Just for the banter, William Gallas would be funny, wouldn't it?
No.
Ashley Cole.
No.
Finally,
I was trying to think of someone like that, and I was like, would Nicholas Bentner be that useful?
Oh, that would be hilarious, wouldn't it? He'd turn up with like Jaeger bombs at meetings and stuff. It'd be fantastic. He'd turn up shagging a taxi. It'd be brilliant.
Oh, God. I'm sure there is someone sensible. I'm not sure about Edu, to be honest. You know, there's being a director of football for a club side, and then there's being a director of football where the entire, you know, you're already set what players you can have. They've got to be Brazilian for him. So he doesn't really have to search that far for players. It's a case of...
You might have to Google them.
Well, yeah, exactly. You just go on FIFA, right? And then go sort of low to high. By Brazilian, and you're sorted. I'm not really sure who we should be looking at. You know, maybe Dennis? It depends because, again, I think we spoke about it when Overmars was linked. That Ajax system is very specialist. That's the reason why so many other ex-players are employed, is not because they like it, is because they're the only people that really know how that club works. And it's looking at someone a little bit like that. If I was looking at an ex-player, to be honest, I might not necessarily look at an Arsenal one.
Do you know
somewhere else?
Do you know the weird thing is probably the best person for that role right now is already employed at Arsenal and doing a very, very good job, and that's Per Mertesacker. I think he'd be a brilliant director of football because he's such a good talker. And whenever every interview I've seen with him since he's taken on this role with the young kids, he just oozes class, and not just class, intelligence. He speaks so well about the game as a whole, and he speaks well on racism in the game. He speaks well about the ladies. And he speaks well about the you know, the young players and how they need to be protected on social media and all these things. He's such a good and intelligent man. He'd be absolutely brilliant. But at the same time, I wouldn't want to take away from what he's doing now, because I genuinely think, you can write this down, 8th of April 2019, I think in 3 to 4 years, we're going to have an academy of brilliant, and I mean brilliant, professional, young professionals. I think we're going to have a really good academy set up, and it's all going to be down to Per and Robert Pirès and Freddie Ljungberg and all the others that work with him. But I think he's doing a really, really good job. I think... David was saying, our own Gunnar Holick was saying similar about when he visited the facilities and whatnot, that he said it was such a good setup. And I did chuckle when they were talking about Spurs' new stadium. They got a new stadium, by the way.
I didn't know that.
It won't ever get old, this, listeners. they were saying that, I think it was Henry Winter. I must admit, I still think he looks a little bit like a... I'm not going to say that because it's libel. But you know what I'm thinking, listeners. Steve certainly does. He was saying, Spurs' training ground is second only to Man City's. And I was sitting there going, ours has been probably one of the best around for 20 years. You know, Man City's is built on, you know, obviously theirs is fantastic now. But Colney's a really good setup, particularly for the youngsters. And any director of football we get has got the best possible system to work in. And let's be honest, anything from Dick Law and Gazidis, you know, anything's an upgrade on that, isn't it? Let's be perfectly honest. So,
although, have you seen Ivan
trying to get Poch, isn't he?
He's trying to pinch Pochettino.
He could make it up, could you? You could take Kane and all the other twats with him.
Yeah, he said, I'll give you 300 million quid as well.
Can I ask you a question, just as a very quick subset to that? Do you think we need a star name in that role? Do we think we need a bit of glitz? Or would you just be comfortable with a safety net of just somebody good at the job?
I don't care who it is as long as they're good at the job. Like, yeah. The Monchi thing is appealing, was appealing, because one of his reputation, but also his name. I think because of his name, it almost makes it a bit easier with certain players. Certain agents, namely the annoying ones like Mendes and people like that, because he already has that relationship and because he has that reputation. An unknown, or you know, unknown to us, you know, as fans, there's probably people who've done this job for 20 years, like all over mainland Europe, who football clubs will know, but we've just never read about, you know, never been discussed. So as long as they're good at the job, I really don't care. As for an ex-player, I mean, Arshavin would be funny. just seeing a short man in a suit is always funny, especially if they're drunk.
Careful about short men in suits. just to saying, you know.
I didn't even twig that. That was just But as for, like, if I actually wanted someone, I like the idea of Gilberto. I think if Vieira hadn't gone into management, I think he would have been very good as well. You know, he's a very intelligent guy. The other one would be, and this will make Jason laugh, and he'll probably never speak to me again, Arteta, if he hadn't gone into management.
Yeah, yeah. He's a good...
I think, again, he's a very intelligent guy who knows football.
Go on, Josh.
I was going to say, there is one player. I'm just trying to see what he's actually doing at the moment.
If you say a Boué.
No. no, I was going to say
Kanu. Fabian Caballero? Or Kanu? Bloody hell.
Say Kanu.
I think Kanu is the kind of guy who make a good ambassador, not necessarily.
He turned 25 for the fourth time. Rumour has it.
It's just someone like that. You know, it's that kind of, it's those like middling players. And I suppose he came through that. Did he come through at Ajax?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Yeah, so it's that kind of setup. I know he's not a big name necessarily, but the players we're trying to, you know, we're trying to get hold of aren't your big name stars, are they?
Yeah.
That wind and dined. And to be honest, if we do have it was like when we got Hector Bellerin, he liked Thierry Henry. So we just phoned up Thierry and went, all right, mate, do you want to come down and meet one?
Have a word.
We want to sign someone.
You always want it to be an entourage.
All of our players will turn up. All of our ex-pros, I believe, other than, you know, like Adebayor, he's probably not going to come pick up the phone up to us if we want the next Tongolese big thing. But I think by far, if, you know, Dennis Bergkamp's completely unemployed as well, we could call up any of our ex-pros.
Yeah.
Bobby Perez, you know, young French talent. Do you want to come meet Perez? If anybody wants to,
ex-pro,
we could call them up and they'd turn up. Certainly when Arsene was here anyway.
I do think a lot of them still have that affinity for the club. And there is if we were going for young English players, why on earth would you not call up, you know, Ian Wright, Lee Dixon, someone, and say, look, can you do this as a favour on behalf of the club? You know, speak to this young guy, speak to their family, tell them what Arsenal's all about and everything. Because if you're young and English, those guys are real icons for you. You know, whether you're an Arsenal fan or not, this is, like Josh said, the same thing, you know, for Bobby Pires or whoever, depending what nation you're from. And I think those kind of characters, not necessarily in a permanent role, but as an ambassador or something like that, can be a big benefit for the club.
The best person for the job, sadly, and I can't believe I overlooked this person when we were talking about this question last time, but the best person for the job is nothing to do with Arsenal, but he is gettable this summer, and that's Luis Campos, who... a lot of people might not know, but he is he's the mastermind behind that Monaco side. Yes, that side. He's got a lot of successes on his CV in that Monaco side in particular. Obviously, the likes of Bernardo Silva, Gibril Sidibe is still there, Benjamin Mendy, Bakayoko. He worked with James Rodriguez when he was at Monaco as well before he went to Bayern Munich. And the worry is he's likely to go to Manchester United, which is a real shit, because he's got a very good reputation in France, and he would probably be, I think there is almost like a danger of, like, do you stick with, you know, your Steve Morrow and keep it in house, like you said, John, it doesn't matter what the name is if they're good at the job, but sometimes it's maybe better to go outside that and come in with a fresh brush. Campos would be an absolutely, you know, for those who don't know much about his track record, just give him a Google and you'll see all about what he did at Monaco. It's astounding what he did at that club. So
But it's you know, he wasn't a one-man band in that. He wasn't, you know, the only guy going around filming.
Oh, God, no. No, it's a whole...
It's this kind of scouting group.
Yeah, it's a team.
That was the point of getting Sven Mislintat in, was to rebuild our scouting network.
Contacts.
And yeah, we've done that. We've got, like, Raoul Chanyehi in the club, who's also got his contacts. Unai Emery will have people he knows. Mm. You know, even Robert Pires, who just walks around the training ground every so often doing whatever he does, picking up cones.
Looking beautiful, basically. Yeah.
Getting hair transplants.
Maybe we could use Denis Suarez, because I don't think he's really up to much.
I don't even want to mention him.
I feel for him. I've
Legend side. What's Lewis Paul Mote up to?
Who?
He's doing all the running for the Legends team.
There you go.
Still,
that's the kind of things that we're, again, kind of looking at. It's going to be, if it's an ex-player, it's going to be one of those not mediocre ones.
Chris Kawamya.
Glenn Helder. Although, didn't he get arrested for having guns and stuff? And,
oh, God knows. Anyway, let's move on, because we've been...
Sorry, we covered the shit out of that. Sorry.
But there you go, Matt L. Roberts. There's a nice long answer for you. Right. Glenn, who is at Glenn DITM.
Is that Glenn Helder?
I don't know. It could be Glenn Helder. I'm not sure. Glenn, if it's you, let us know. Do you believe that Lacazette and Aubameyang should start together in the majority of games? It makes me crazy when one's on the bench just in case we need a spark of offense in the second half. They are the two of the best strikers in the Premier League. Chris, what do you reckon?
No, I don't. I know that's hard, but I just don't. I think the only way they can start together is as a two. And people don't play twos. Don't get me wrong, Aubameyang can do a job wide, but he's half the player. And Lacazette, despite what people continually tell me, oh, but he can play wide, he can play in the... No, he's a goal scorer. That's what he does. That's what he's good at. And he works his ass off. And he's a brilliant target man and a brilliant finisher close in. It's a dilemma. But the good thing is, because of their friendship, they probably understand there's going to be a bit of rotation. It's ironic that Laka started the season on the bench and is ending the season up front, and the opposite to Elba. So you got two world-class strikers, just rotate them. You don't need to play them both. And until we can learn how to defend and be solid, I just don't think you can risk both of them, unless you're playing, you know, Huddersfield at home. Then you can probably do it. But in the big games, I just think it's, I don't know. I know we've done it, but I'm not sure. So it's a no from me, I'm afraid.
There we go. Another one from Noir. This one is for me, apparently. Steve mentioned not so long ago that Arsenal are looking to bring in a young Polish keeper. I can't remember his name. Chris will probably know. I've put Chris on the spot now. Since the likes of Milik, Zielinski, and most recently Piontek, I love saying that, have become important figures for bigger teams, shouldn't we be scouting Poland for outfield players as well? In short, yes. There is a big issue at Arsenal that I hope has been addressed briefly by Sven, and since Sven's departure has hopefully been carried on. It's not just Poland, it's sort of Eastern Europe. We haven't looked enough or well enough at those sort of players. There's always talent there. You see a lot of them in Syria. They tend to have a lot of scouts sort of throughout Bosnia, Serbia, Poland, those kind of countries, and they pick up a lot of players from that league. And they're really, really good players who you can get, let's be fair, very, very cheap price. I think Genoa paid like 3 million euros for Piontek and then sold him in 6 months for, oh, I don't know, what, 30, 40 million euros or something to Milan. And it wouldn't surprise me if they have a sell-on clause as well. And, you know, considering his form this season, if he does it again next year, you know, the way he's playing, he could be somebody who ends up at Real Madrid or something ridiculous. So,
but for every Piontek, there's a... Who's the lad who went to Leicester, who... Kapuska, who looks so good. Krychowiak's another one, yeah. They look so good.
I mean, again, you can... Kapuska is a bit different because he's still young and he's still got the chance, obviously, but sometimes a player goes to the wrong club at the wrong time it doesn't always work out. But it's certainly something we should look at.
Radoslaw Majecki is the chap. I couldn't remember his surname, but yeah, Majecki from Legia Warsaw is the chap. Yeah.
I was going to say there's the one thing of signing all these great young players is actually... us as a fan base being committed to them playing and them going through these spells. You know, we can, you know, we're still on the fence with Guendouzi, obviously, Chris aside.
No, we're not.
We've seen him for so long. But, you know, seeing being okay with the player being hot and cold from week to week.
Yeah.
I don't think we could cope, to be honest. And I don't think we're in the position to be playing these players week in, week out through
it. Look at Hector. I mean, he was drafted in away at Dortmund, wasn't he? Like out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And now we just assume who's right back was Hector. Well, there's no questioning
that's,
it, is it? And
it's like bringing one player in, though, and the squad is stable. We're saying bring in loads of kids.
No.
I think that's one of the things that
one or two max.
You can do it in like a Monaco. You can do it as a Dortmund. You can do it as a Genoa. When you're a club in a league which is 98% of the time one horse, you can get away with taking more risks in your starting 11.
But then even like you mentioned Dortmund, that's a prime example. They've been leading the Bundesliga title race all season and they got absolutely smashed by Bayern on Saturday. And one of the chief culprits defensively was the young lad Zagadou. You're all doing it, listeners, so I just thought I'd fill it in. But he was hugely rated by PSG. They were gutted to let him go. And he probably will go on to become a really quality centre-half, but he's been thrown in at the very deep end. It's brilliant that Lucien Favre has given him as many games as he has, but then when it comes to the crunch and he plays by and he gets absolutely ripped a new one, and now all the fans are, you know, saying, what the hell's this kid doing on a lineup? And like you said, Josh, our fan base is so bloody toxic. You know, the first bloody mistake somebody makes, you know, they'll be Mustafied. It's like, look at Iwobi, you know, he's had like you said, he's had a brilliant season, yet people are still saying that he's a championship player. Absolute bollocks.
Couple more questions quickly before we do. If we do sign any Polish players, You can't be doing this celebration like Piontek. I don't care if you go pure Piontek. You look like a right dickhead. They've got nothing to do with the fact you play for AC Milan, obviously. Neil McKeown, at McKeown_AFC. Where is Steve Bald?
Good question, actually.
Where is Steve Bald? On his head.
Very good.
Very good. dear, let's maybe chuckle a little bit too much, Josh, you twat. and he also asked a similar question to Noir Confidential, actually, he's got two questions. With Croatia reaching the World Cup final, shouldn't we be looking at Croatians as potential summer transfers? Their right back was outstanding. You can't have him. He's at Inter. He's very good, though. Velasco, he signed from Atletico Madrid. He'd also cost a lot of money, but he's very, very good. And we got Hector anyway. It's fine. He's a left back, not right back. But he does have a question for you, Josh. Are we still able to attract the big names if we don't get Champions League footy next year?
I think we are. It depends what we mean by big names. Are we going to be able to, you know, rip some of the absolute world-class players out of world football? Probably not. But outside of Champions League football, we got Aubameyang and Lacazette. I don't think that's, they're pretty decent strikers at the end of it. I think for the problems we've got, we don't necessarily need world-class players. In defence, I don't think we need a world-class centre-back to create a world-class defence. We saw Socrates was less than 30 million. I think we could easily pay that again and get someone of a similar quality. We've got Bob Holding coming through in that kind of position. If he's got someone experienced to learn from, I think we've got an English centre-back there that can do us for a decade in that position. I think where we might have to spend serious money might be left back. But otherwise, wingers, 10 for a penny. You know, you could blow your budget on a Pepe or you could go for a Sar. There's players that could grow into certain positions. And I think winger is one of those where you could afford to, I'd say scrimp. Go cheap. You could go cheap on a winger and come out with gold. I think it's one of the positions where you can actually afford to do that. Same with centre back, to be honest. I think you can cheap out on a centre back and pick up a good centre back.
Or blood one right. In Saka or Sako, Sake, I keep getting it wrong, Saka, or Reece Nelson, who, I think the jury's out on that one. But
Amici as well.
Yeah.
God, I don't think any of those three, though, are ready to slip straight into the first team.
Oh, no.
Position we need straight away. Ryan Fraser is a very interesting prospect in that regard. He stats incredibly well, but a lot of the football goes through him, so it's one of those you've got to take with a pinch of salt.
Do you not think, though, because you watch a lot of Championship stuff as well, Josh, and you probably saw him a lot when he was in the Championship, and the thing that bugs me with Fraser, it's not because he's not a sexy name, it's not because he's short and fat, it's because he's a classic, looks brilliant at Bournemouth, stick him at Arsenal, I just don't think he's that level.
It's like
the lad of Celtic, Tierney. I don't think he would be good at a high level club.
I tend to agree with him that he is one of those that does look like the perfect player of enjoys being a slightly bigger fish in his pond. He's got now finally in front of him a reliable Callum Wilson in terms of injuries. That kid, Callum Wilson, have crying out for at least two or three seasons. We should have got him at Arsenal. It's a bit late now because he's at that level where he's not going to want to play second fiddle to a Lacazette, arguably. He's going to want to play first team football. And if you've got anybody who is feeding a great striker like that, it's going to have good stats. And to be fair, we've got just as good strikers. I think, as you say, the issue is he any better than what we've got?
And what would he cost? I mean, Bournemouth would, there's no way they'd do it cheap, is there? I mean, they buy cheap and sell high, don't they? I don't think he'd be cheap. What is it they wanted for Wilson? 50 million from Chelsea?
I think they wanted a bit more. I think they were shouting 75.
During
January, though, and bearing in mind the way that they kind of buy players, they bought Callum Wilson when they're in the Championship, and they've tried to buy a lot more strikers to replace him.
And they wanted 75.
Defoe was a good one, to be fair. Just Eddie Howe can't cope with good players.
But if they'd have been offered, so if they wanted 75 million, let's be honest, if Chelsea had walked over and slapped 40 million on the desk, they'd have sold him, wouldn't they? They wanted 75. They'd have taken 40. But if they quoted us, say, for argument's sake, 35 million for Ryan Fraser, which even the words sound nuts, we could, okay, I'm biased, I know, but we could go to France and get a winger just as good for 7, 8.
Yes, yeah, what I mean, let's just say, like a winger is a position you can scrimp on and come out with gold. You can pick up a cheap winger. You know, Jadon Sancho was compensation to Man City. And look at him now. He's getting quoted as a £100 million player. I mean,
Schalke as well.
Yeah, there's plenty of players out there that we could get. Who's the one at Leverkusen? Kai Havertz?
I think he'll go for big money. Julian Brandt's another one who's having a brilliant season, but they'll go for bigger money. But
they're not necessarily, it's not a case that it's more we might not get necessarily the big known names or the big heard of ones, but you may know, if you look that player up and go, they got like 10 goals last season or something like that.
The problem we've got, I know you want to move on, so just keep this brief. The problem we've got is we're the Arsenal. We'll always attract players. The problem we've got is the minute those players' heads are turned by the Bayern Munichs, the Real Madrids, the PSGs, or the Chelseas, the Man Citys, even the Liverpools.
We can't afford that money.
We can't afford. Yeah. So if we keep it under the radar, you know, if Nicolas Pepe, to use Josh's example there, before this season, you would have got him from France for Jovinho price, 12, 13 million. He's had a brilliant season, but let's be honest, Real Madrid are not going to look at Nicolas Pepe because they want a name. They want a brand. They want Eden Hazard, for example, or Neymar. Whereas Arsenal would probably go, Nicolas Pepe would be brilliant. And I'm pretty sure Nicolas Pepe would think, Arsenal sounds fucking fantastic. But Lille will use Arsenal to get the interest of Liverpool and United. And then we're just like, nah. So if we keep it under the wraps, if we can keep it under the radar, there's no reason why we can't go and get a Koulibaly. But only if we're willing to pay that top money. And I think we all know we've got an owner that probably isn't keen on that idea.
To be honest, it's one of those that, the, what was it? What was he called? The pyramid pennant was 35 35 million.
Yeah,
Roma.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not world class fees, is it? And look what he did when he came over.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, he's been, I was going to say he's been pretty shit this season. He hasn't really, but I still think he's fucking well overrated. There you go.
Oh, he is. Mohamed Selfish.
Not my favourite insult, though. I think, what was it? Someone called Neymar, the tropical Stuart Downing. That was quite impressive.
You've got to be so careful. I've come up with a few in my head and gone, no, that's racist. No, that's massively homophobic. No, that.
The worst thing was, the first time I heard that, I went to quote it back to someone and I said, instead of Stuart Downing, I said Adam Johnson by mistake. And I was
that's
horribly wrong. Anyway, moving on very quickly. We've got two final questions. We've got to rush through to try and keep this under time. This one's for you, Chris. So be quick. Last one from Noir. It's to Chris, since he loves Ollie G so much. If we get to the Europa League final and we play against Chelsea, do you think our fans will be cheering Giroud's name like they did during our Premier League batch, or considering the occasion, will they abstain?
Oh, God. How do I answer that quickly? Do you know what? The best answer I can give to that is I haven't got a bloody clue, because I can't work our fan base out anymore. I think I tweeted this out yesterday. I put it as my pinned tweet. That line from Fever Pitch: you never quite know if life's shit because Arsenal is shit, or the other way around. And it's the same with our fans and who they like and who they don't like. Literally, one minute you wake up Monday morning and everybody hates Mustafi. Then Tuesday morning, everybody hates Xhaka. And then Thursday morning, everybody hates Ramsey. I just can't. Yeah. And that's for former players, God knows. I will always love Olivier Giroud, and I don't care if anybody hates me or not. I'll always love Cesc Fabregas, just because they're brilliant players and they had a brilliant time at Arsenal. But I think we can all agree we'd rather not play Chelsea in the final, because as much as it'd be lovely to beat them, I don't want to have any opportunity that we could potentially lose to them. That would be worse than that Champions League game to lose to that lot in the final. Blah, God, no.
I think we could probably convince certainly Sarri that Giroud is still on, that he's still on loan.
Mm.
You know, our fan base is so, I've never known a fan base still be so behind a player after he's left.
He still loves us, that's why.
On to a rival.
Yeah.
As well.
You he know, still loves us.
When Chelsea weren't really a team that counted for anything, and they were bumming around, you know, like fifth, sixth, tenth in the Premier League, and them going there was a huge step down.
Yeah.
It's interesting now that we're still behind. I think he's the only player that's done it to the fan base.
I think the best case scenario for all concerned is the Santi Cazorla effect. He goes back to France in the summer, goes back to Montpellier, or better still, goes to someone like Lyon and has a lovely time. We draw them in the Champions League, we smash them 7-0, and we give Ollie a lovely round of applause. That's the best case scenario.
Like an Eduardo, right? Where we go, oh yeah, we were meant to give you that goal because we're really nice. It wasn't a defensive error.
We soiled him sending him to that lot, didn't we? But anyway, it's supposed to be brief, sorry.
And last question, I don't know, you're going to be brief with this, Josh, from Nicky Wilson. Do we need more British players in the squad next season?
Brexit means Brexit.
I mean,
that's for Steve.
Yeah, that aside, we actually do. I think in terms of, because this is where I get really confused, even at my level. There's two levels of homegrown, and depending on which competition you're in, depends on whether or not they're homegrown or not.
Oh God,
there's the homegrown nation, homegrown, but then there's actually homegrown, came through your academy, homegrown.
Yeah, and I think that's the, if they're from the age of 16 and been with you for at least 3 years.
Yeah.
Like a Fabregas would have counted as homegrown. So Bellerin counts as homegrown.
Yeah, so you've got like homegrown, but then Rob Holding isn't homegrown because he didn't come through our academy. Yeah, there's one of those, John. I know you're looking
weird. European, is that for UEFA?
Yeah, there's something weird in you. I don't think it's Premier League. I think it's UEFA that's really, where we've only got four players that count towards that. Bellerin, Martinez, Iwobi, and Maitland-Niles.
Nketiah would have as
Nketiah,
well.
Nketiah's 19, though.
So in short, yes, we do,
which is why I think we're getting linked with Ryan Fraser, because he's Scottish. and as far as I know, they're still part of the United Kingdom. unless they get their way.
Do you know what we should do? We should sign Scott Brown and just have massive shithousery in our midfield. That'd be brilliant, wouldn't it? Just people punching everybody every 5 minutes. It'd be fantastic.
I do like the, as Ramsey is leaving, I do like the Welsh kid at Swansea.
The Rafido one.
I was thinking of David Brooks at Bournemouth. He's another one. They've just signed him up to a new big contract.
But I like the
I'd go for him.
Who's the fullback at Norwich? You'll know this, Josh.
I've got to be careful here. One of them is from Ireland, and I can't remember which one. So he's homegrown.
It's the the lads who looks a
you've
bit.
You've got Aarons and you've got Lewis.
Aarons. Oh, is it? No, I think it's Lewis. I think it's Lewis.
Aarons is right back.
I mean, both are great. But yeah, I like those.
Lewis is Northern Irish off the top of my head.
Ah, that's fine. That'll do.
That's still fine. Again, they're also still part of this country at the moment.
Bring them all in. We'll have them all. And yeah.
So they'd be good options. The only thing that would kind of hold us back, as almost a sensible answer to why we probably couldn't get a young fullback, is because nobody wants to go behind Hector Bellerin at the moment, because you're not realistically going to get a look in for a player that is going to be starting when he's back 75 to 80% of our games.
Yeah. All I'm saying is, has Wan-Bissaka got a left foot? Because, you know, I'm just throwing it out there, because he could be a great left back.
Another thing to add on that, United need a right back desperately, so Wan-Bissaka is out the window. He's going there.
Fuck it.
They need English players and they need a right back. It's almost irritatingly in the stars unless we get Ian Wright to do something about it.
That's true. And I don't know if Wan-Bissaka can play left back. But there you go. Anyway, there we go. That's all the questions. So thank you very much for everyone who sent your questions in. If anyone else did whilst we were recording this, I'm sorry I didn't get the chance to look. I know my head's been going all over the place. I'm trying to read different screens. But that's it. So all that's left to do now is to do our shout-outs. I've said that now, and Chris and Josh are now frantically trying to remember and forgot that they had to do a shout out on this bit, so I'm feeling a little bit here.
No, I'm all good. I'm ready for once.
Oh wow. Okay, so I'll go to Chris first for his shout out.
Yeah, well, I've got two as always. First of all, I mentioned already, but a big shout out to our good friend Kelly, Canadian Kelly, because I haven't said hello to her for a little while. So hello to her and her cat. She sent me a really interesting video of the cats cleaning each other last night. That isn't as dodgy as it sounds. Genuinely, they were just cleaning each other. It was quite sweet. So, yes, hi to Kelly and her crazy cats.
Can I say hi to Kelly as well when she slipped into my DMs?
Yeah, you as well. And John.
Ooh, we put that on the internet. Christ.
Oh, my God. Well, what have you done, Josh? And the other one actually is to another Canadian, probably the greatest Canadian known to man, Mr. Jeff Holofrand, a wonderful man. There are no words that express how much I love that man possible in a podcast. So I will say that much. But Jeff and I go full geek every week where we talk FIFA basically all weekend. We send each other voice messages and standard messages and WhatsApp about how much AIDS is in FIFA 19 and how bad we are at weekend league, and basically Jeff makes me look average pretty much every weekend, but we have lots of conversations, we have a good laugh, and thanks to some very wizardly advice this week and some custom tactics help, Jeff has got me to gold 3. So thank you, Jeff. You're a wonderful man. And yes, God love Jeff and all his family. So there you are, Mr. Holofrand. That's for you.
Josh, who is your shout out for this week?
I'm going to go for probably, I think there's a spate of these accounts cropping up at the moment, but I'm going to go for @outofcontextarse.
Oh, you bastard.
That's good, isn't it? Yeah, I've noticed that's crept out of nowhere.
I've literally got their page open on my other screen.
There's a lot of things coming through there. I think it's absolutely brilliant. My tongue-in-cheek one would be to kick it out, but no, yes. I think don't be dicks, guys and girls. Don't be twats.
There we go.
I've done my bit.
You've done your bit. Well done, mate. Yeah, I was going to do out of context stars as well for my shout out, but Josh has stolen it for me. But there are a lot of out of context ones at the moment. Out of context Mustafi, if you want to jump on the bandwagon even a little bit more, is quite hilarious, especially as they always throw in the one of him dancing every now and again, which is great. But no, my shout out is going to be, I've got a couple of people just very quickly to reel off. Jason, for all the stuff with the radio. I was supposed to be on the show yesterday and I couldn't make it, and thankfully he covered for me. And thank you to Lana and Ellis as well, because originally it was just going to be me and Jason, and those two stepped in, so big thanks to them. I know there was a few technical difficulties whilst they were doing the shows, but big thanks to that. Thank you to all the listeners and all the people on the radio show who do tune in and watch live, and all of you who listen afterwards as well. Like, honestly, make it so much better for us. I know we probably still do it even if you weren't watching, but you make our job a lot easier and a lot more fun. And shout out Danny, who is still not feeling very well, and apparently that's excuse for not coming on. I don't think
give him credit.
Yeah, one job. Think it's because Sean is probably back from university and he just wanted the night off. He's lying.
Yeah, we should give a pod shout out as well very quickly to a club called Manchester City. Why, I hear you ask? Simple. They're playing some team that's got a new stadium, apparently, three times in the space of 10 days. So if they could kindly smash 10 past the twats three times in next week, that would be lovely. They play them tomorrow and Wednesday and Tuesday.
I recently started about a month or 5-6 weeks into a new job, and one of the guys there is a Spurs fan. He's a nice bloke, very nice, and
I refuse to believe that.
Yeah, I know. He's not the typical Spurs fan who will come in and gloat whenever Arsenal lose. He did make a heartburn joke when we lost to Rennes, I'm not going to lie, which is kind of funny at least.
What they got to gloat about?
Yeah, I know. But I saw him today and I said, oh, that Everton game was tough. And he said, I'm not saying anything. We're playing Man City three times.
A wise man. A very, very wise man.
I'm not saying a word. He said, I may as well just go into hiding, because there's a lot of Arsenal fans where I work. So I hope you're having a nice time, Gary. Yeah, that is it for tonight's show. Thank you for watching, everyone. We will be back for the radio show on Thursday. It will be, I think it's me, Jason, and Josh. Are you on, or is it Ellis? Or
I would be very surprised if it's me.
It's probably not you.
I'm not at my house.
Oh, okay. I don't know who it is, so I'm frantically scrolling through my feed.
I'm doing the next Napoli game.
Hey!
I am doing the second leg.
Can't cope with Josh and HD twice a week. Yeah, that's just spoiling me.
It is, in fact, me, Jason, and Ellis.
Fuck Ellis.
Yeah, I know. Unfortunately, so I've got. Oh, God. Ellis is being changed because he covered for me yesterday. I don't know. Me and Jason will be there. We're always there.
Somebody will be there. It'll just be you and Jace talking to each other for three hours about cats.
And obviously, we'll be live after the. Who's after that? Watford? Yeah.
Yeah.
Monday. Monday, yeah, another Monday night one. So another show there, which I think is Carl and some other people.
I believe I'm on it.
I think I'm looking, yes. And Jason again, unless he decides to have that night off and chat me on. Yeah, and that's it. I don't know what else I'm supposed to announce. Oh, there might be a little special thing me and Jason are doing with another guy.
Excuse me?
Oh, yeah. Do tell.
It sounds funnier than it is. But no,
has it got anything to do with Mustafi's long balls?
But actually, kind of.
Need to press stop.
But no, it's very close to my heart and Jason's and everyone on the pods as well. But there'll be
a little
announcement about it, and it's all for a good cause and stuff. So we'll give you a shout when that goes live. I don't want to say too much more, but. Yeah, it'll be great if you guys can watch that and support it for us. But that's it. So just last to say, thank you to Josh for coming on.
It's been wonderful, John. Thank you.
Thank you for being in HD and showing off your golf clubs and making all the Northerners jealous.
I mean, it's incredible now. Kelly's going to continue slipping into my DMs telling me how amazing my kitchen is.
Yeah, wow.
I know, right?
Kitchener.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And thank you to Chris for getting dressed up and appearing as well last minute.
Yep, coming to a courthouse near you. You're very welcome. And Aaron Ramsey, Arsenal legend. They are, Jace. Wow. I don't mean that. I'm just making Jace feel happy.
You had to ruin it. Why did you say that?
That's all right. Happy.
And also thank you to Tommy the cat. So if you're not, if you're only listening, you're not watching, you need to watch, because one, you get to see Chris in a suit, which is very strange, and two, you get to see a cat who's been doing all sorts of things in the background the whole way through.
I've just woken him up and he looks quite miserable now.
So that is it. We have been a Burkamp Wonderland, an Arsenal podcast. What does Danny say? Oh yeah, nanu nanu, you cheeky monkeys.